Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4. Ambarish Maharaj offended by Durvasa Muni, and we're beginning with text number 2. No purports. Translation. Nabhaga inquired, "My dear brothers, what have you given to me as my share of our father's property?" His elder brothers answered, "We have kept our father as your share." Quite generous. But when Nabhaga went to his father and said, "My dear father, my elder brothers have given you as my share of property," the father replied, "My dear son, do not rely upon their cheating words. I am not your property." Nabhaga's father said, "All the descendants of Angira are now going to perform a great sacrifice. But although they are very intelligent, on every sixth day, they will be bewildered in performing sacrifice and will make mistakes in their daily duties." Purport. Nabhaga was very simple-hearted. Therefore, when he went to his father, the father, in compassion for his son, suggested that as a means of livelihood, Nabhaga could go to the descendants of Angira and take advantage of their misgivings in performing yajna. Nabhaga's father continued, "Go to those great souls and describe 2 Vedic hymns pertaining to Vishvadev. When the great sages have completed the sacrifice and are going to the heavenly planets, they will give you the remnants of the money they have received from the sacrifice. Therefore, go there immediately." Thus, Nabhaga acted exactly according to the advice of his father, and the great sages of the Angira dynasty gave him all their wealth and then went to the heavenly planets. While Nabhaga was accepting the riches, a black-looking person from the north came to him and said, "All the wealth from the sacrificial arena belongs to me." Nabhaga said, "These riches belong to me. The great saintly persons have delivered them to me." When Nabhaga said this, the black-looking person replied, "Let's go to your father and ask him to settle our disagreement." In accordance with this, Nabhaga inquired from his father. The father of Nabhaga said, "Whatever the great sages sacrificed in the arena of Daksha Yajna, they offered to Lord Shiva as his share. Therefore, everything in the sacrificial arena certainly belongs to Lord Shiva." Thereupon, after offering obeisance to Lord Shiva, Nabhaga said, "O worshipful Lord, everything in this arena of sacrifice is yours. This is the assertion of my father. Now with great respect, I bow my head before you, begging your mercy." Lord Shiva said, "Whatever your father said is the truth, and you are also speaking the same truth. Therefore, I who know the Vedic mantras shall explain Vedic transcendental knowledge to you." Lord Shiva said, "Now you may take all the wealth remaining from the sacrifice, for I give it to you." After saying this, Lord Shiva, who is most adherent to the religious principles, disappeared from that place. Obviously, it's not in Kali Yuga. If one hears and chants, remembers this narration in the morning and evening. So you have to remember it in the morning and the evening. At least we've started out this morning. Now, this evening you have to remember it too. He certainly becomes learned, experienced and understand the Vedic hymns, and expert in self-realization. From Nabhaga, Maharaj Ambarish took birth. Maharaj Ambarish was an exalted devotee, celebrated for his great merits. Although he was cursed by an infallible Brahmana, the curse could not touch him. King Parikshit inquired, "A great personality, Maharaj Ambarish was certainly most exalted and meritorious in character. I wish to hear about him. How surprising it is that the curse of a Brahmana, which is insurmountable, could not act upon him." Shukadeva Goswami said, Maharaj Amrisha, the most fortunate personality, achieved the rule of the entire world, consisting of seven islands, and achieved inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and prosperity on earth. Although such a position is rarely obtained, Maharaj Amrisha did not care for it at all, for he knew very well that all such opulence is material, like that which is imagined in a dream. Such opulence will ultimately be destroyed. The king knew that any non-devotee who obtained such opulence merges increasingly into material nature's mode of darkness. Purport. For a devotee, material opulence is insignificant, whereas for a non-devotee, material opulence is the cause of increasing bondage. For a devotee knows that anything material is temporary, whereas a non-devotee regards the temporary so-called happiness as everything and forgets the path of self-realization. Thus, for the non-devotee, material opulence is a disqualification for spiritual advancement. Maharaj Amrish was the great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, and of the saintly persons who are the Lord's devotees. Because of this devotion, he thought of the entire universe as being insignificant as a piece of stone. So we'll read the first part of text number 18. Savai Manat Krishna Padara Vindayo Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunan Vardhane Karohira Mandira Marjanadisu Shutim Chakarachuta Satkatodaye. Mukunda Lingalia Darshane Drisho Tapritya Gatra Sparshane Nga Sangamam Kuranam Chetat Pada Saro Rasarabe Srimat Tulasya Rasanam Tadarpite Padoharira Kshetra Padanu Sarpane Shiro Rishikesha Padaba Vandane Kamam Chadasye Natu Kamya Kamyaya Yatotama Shloka Junashraya Rati Saha. He, Maharaj Amrisha, Vai, indeed, Manaha, his mind, Krishna Vidar Aravindayo, fixed upon the two lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Vachamsi, his words, Vaikuntha Gunanu Vardhane, describing the glories of Krishna. Karo, his two hands, Hare, Mandira Marjanadishu, and activities like cleansing the temple of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shutim, his ear, Shikara, engaged, Achuta, of or about Krishna, who never falls down. Shikara, Satkatodaye Udaye, in hearing the transcendental narrations. Translation of purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Amrish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna. His words in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the Lord's temple, and his ears in hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. Engage his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temple and Krishna's places, like Mathura and Vrindavan. Engage his senses of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. engage his sense of smell and smelling the fragrance of Tulsi offered to the Lord, and engage his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasada. Engage his legs in walking to the holy places and temples of the Lord, his head in bowing down before the Lord, and all his desires in serving the Lord 24 hours a day. Indeed, Maharaj Ambarisha never desired anything for his own sense gratification. He engaged all his senses in devotional service and various engagements relating to the Lord. This is the way to increase attachment to the Lord, and be completely free from all material desires. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7.1, the Lord recommends, Maya Saktamanat Parata Yogam Yunjanmara Shrayaha. This indicates that one must execute devotional service under the guidance of a devotee or directly under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not possible, however, to train oneself without guidance from the spiritual master. Therefore, according to the instructions of Srila Rupa Goswami, the first business of a devotee is to accept a bona fide spiritual master who can train him to engage his various senses and rendering transcendental service to the Lord. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 7.1, Asam shayam samagramam yata gyasasi tatschinu. In other words, if one wants to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in completeness, one must follow the prescriptions given by Krishna by following in the footsteps of Maharaj Ambarisha. It is said, Rishikesha, Rishikena, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti Uchate. Bhakti means to engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna, who is called Rishikesh or Achyuta. These words are used in these verses. Achyuta Satkatodaye. Rishikesha Pradabhivandane. The words Achyuta and Rishikesha are also used in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna Katha, spoken by Krishna, directly by Krishna, and Srimad Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha, because everything described in the Bhagavatam is in relation to Krishna. Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindaye Vachamsi Vaikuntha Guna Nuvardhane Kuro Harira Mandira Marjanadishu Shutim Chakarucha Satkatodaye. So this begins with Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo. That Maharaj Ambarish, first of all, fixed his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it seems rather strange, because we always hear about how the first business is to hear about Krishna. As the verse that's quoted here, Maya Asakta, with the mind attached to Krishna. And how do we attach the mind to Krishna? Savaya manak Krishna, maya sakta manak parata, yogam yunjan. We have to practice yoga. Or as Krishna says, bandurat matmanas tasya, anatmanatmanas, udarat atmanatmanam, atmanam avasadayat, admaiva yatmano bandur, atmaiva ripur atmana. That a person has to elevate himself by his own mind and not degrade himself. That the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For one who has conquered the mind, it becomes the best of friends. And for one who fails to do so, his very mind will be the greatest enemy. So yoga centers around the mind. We have so many things we can do with this body. But we may do so many things, but if our mind is not on Krishna, it's certainly not a waste of time. Can your wife translate for Nanda Priya? Or you can translate her? Oh yeah, I guess you have to translate. Because you don't speak German. Do you speak German, Nandapriya? Gavrish par, was Nimitz? Oh, you speak Ukraine too? Oh, good. Well, anyhow, he can translate. Gavrish Pangliski? Oh, okay. Choot choot? So many languages. As Prabhupada said, this is the United Nations of the spiritual world. So to fix the mind upon Krishna, Arjuna, he complains in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, well, as a matter of fact, Arjuna starts giving some doubts to Krishna at the end of the sixth chapter. I know it starts with the yo. Oh, I guess it's yo yam yogas twaya proktas samyena madhusudana itasya hamna pashami chanchalat stami. I don't know that verse so well. Yo yam yogas twaya proktas samyena madhusudana itasya hamna pashami chanchalat vat sitam siram. Arjuna said, the system of yoga which you have explained to me, it's very difficult because the mind is difficult to control, like trying to control the wind. Chanchalam himana Krishna pramati balavadridam tasyaham nigraham manye vayori vasaduskritam. The mind is restless, turbulent, and very strong, O Krishna, and to try to subdue it. Oh, that's the one about more difficult than controlling the wind. So if anyone has ever noticed, or as Prahlad Maharaj said, actually in this world, we have no enemy except for the uncontrolled mind. So think about that for a few years. How many of us are think we have other enemies except for our uncontrolled mind? Because after all, even if all our enemies died or left, and we still had our mind, we'd still be in trouble. We'd find something else to be concerned about. And if the mind is controlled, then we have nothing to worry about. So what are we trying to do? Are we trying to change this material universe so that we feel comfortable here? Make sure our bed is in the right place? And that anyone who doesn't smile on me, the Yamadutas come and take them away immediately. That everything's arranged perfectly all the time. Wherever I go, the Gandharvas is singing to me. The food is exactly what I want. The spicing is what I always desire at every moment. Is that what we actually want? On the other hand, what does it mean to have a controlled mind? I think most of us, we know what it's like not to have a controlled mind. Because most of our time, our mind is spent on things which have no value whatsoever. Even from a practical point of view. And yet if you ask your mind, my dear mind, why are you going to so many different places? What is the value of it? What do you hope to achieve? What will our mind tell us? Oh, come on, why are you complaining? Just follow me around. I'll show you wonderful things. So fixing the mind, actually controlling the mind, means to fix it on Krishna. And therefore Krishna says, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Asamshaya Mahabaho Manodur Nigraham Shalam. Krishna says it's actually very difficult to control the mind. It's not a surprise that it's we have a uncontrolled mind, or we have it, that we find it difficult to control the mind all the time, because it's difficult. Krishna has explained that he's empowered Maya on the same level as himself, and he's unlimited. He's all-powerful. So Maya in the material world is also all-powerful. If we accept Maya, then it's all-powerful. As one devotee was complaining to Srila Prabhupada, oh, my mind is so difficult to control. So Prabhupada said, don't spend your time glorifying Maya. Try to glorify Krishna. So yes, the mind is difficult. Daivi eshigunamai mama maya duratya mameva ye prapadyante maya me tam tarantite. It is very difficult to curb the restless mind. But it's possible by suitable practice. So that's what we're doing. This is what Maharaj Ambrish is showing us. First of all, Savayamanat Krishna Padara Vindaya. Why is this first? Because everything else is a waste of time if we don't realize that we're trying to control the mind. We can do all these other activities, smell the flowers, we can clean the temple, we can walk to the temple, we can do so many things, but if we're not trying to do it in Krishna consciousness, or at least understand that that's the goal, then we're just wasting our time. Not exactly wasting our time, we're wasting everyone's time. Wasting the human form of life. Now, of course, walking to the temple, smelling the incense, smelling the flowers, talking about Krishna, it's not a complete waste of time. It's a preparation so that eventually we can think about Krishna. But there are fundamental understandings that we have to go through. The idea of smelling the flower or cleaning the temple is more or less to acknowledge that all this belongs to Krishna and is meant to be utilized to please Him. It is not simply an exercise to get the body fit, cleaning the temple, or clearing out the nostrils by smelling the incense. My nose was stuffed up. I think I'll go to the temple and smell the incense there. Now the purpose is so that we can remember Krishna. Or we can acknowledge that this belongs to Krishna and Krishna wants me to smell the incense. He wants me to appreciate it. But He wants me to do it in such a way as that it's in Krishna consciousness. When the four Kumaras were in Vaikuntha or in the gates of Vaikuntha, then Lord Narayan himself came, and when the four Kumaras smelled the tulsi leaves and the sandalwood paste, which were on the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, by that experience they changed from impersonalists to devotees of Lord Narayan, out of love. Because everything about Lord Narayan conveys transcendental emotional love, including the sandalwood paste and the tulsi leaves at his feet. So if we approach the temple, oh, here's another day in the temple, someone's going to wave this fan, you know, these deities never move. I don't know what kind of service they're accepting. They never seem to be bothered by anything. You know, it's the same old incense they always burn, same old devotees every time, or some of them come at least. If we approach it like that, then Krishna, the deities, which are also Krishna, the devotees, everything, the incense, everything will reciprocate with us, and it'll just be the same old thing every day. because we don't expect it to be anything else. And Krishna won't disappoint us. He won't shock us. My God, the deity is real. This is terrible. What about all my plans? Oh my God, I'm going to feel guilty. Sorry, deities, I got to do all these things, but now I feel guilty about it. Please help me forget you. So be it. Oh, I'm back in Maya. Oh, that was a relief. I was almost Krishna conscious. My material life was spoiled. So if we want to be in Maya, Krishna will bestow all his mercy on us through his material energy. And if we want to come as if it might be an exciting new experience, that spirit, when I pick up my beads, it's not going to be the same old schnick, schnick, ram, ram, day, 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 hey, kitty, kitty, hey, kitty, kitty, ram, 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 day, 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 hey, 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 hey. No, it might be something interesting, something experiential, that I'm actually going to get some transcendental illumination, some transcendental experience from this seemingly simple activity. Otherwise, we think, well, yoga means if you can stand on your hands, you're progressing. And if you can go to one hand, well, you're practicing the spiritual world already. One finger, you're divine. Something exciting. Everyone's taking pictures. Wow. Facebook. Mahayogi. And if you see a little devotee chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, what a waste of time. He could be doing something more exciting, like standing on his hand or something. Something that would improve his digestion so he could eat more prasadam. Something practical. Because we don't understand that there's a whole other realm of experience, spiritual experience, which goes way beyond what we can ever conceive of in our present state, but which we can enter into gradually. We can get a little taste, a fraction of a drop in the ocean of devotional service, which will make us unbelievably enlivened for maybe even a week. We can't conceive of the potency of even the simplest activity in devotional service. But we have to be open-minded that it could exist. It could be real. We could actually get that experience if we could accept it. If we were open to it. If we didn't worry about what problems I get from becoming too blissful. What I'd be missing out in the material world, all the things I'm dreaming about now, if I gave them up, where would there be any happiness? So that we have to give up and become a little receptive. So that's called detachment. And then there's suitable detachment from our material conceptions, our material ideas, which the most significant one is that devotional service. Yeah, it's nice. Prasadam is good. Once in a while I meet a friendly devotee. You know, the deities sometimes are dressed quite nicely. Yeah, sure, the kirtan, I like that. You know, once in a while I forget all my miseries and problems for a few minutes during the kirtan. And I like the beat sometimes. I even feel like dancing once every while. So, to actually accept there, we could actually go back to the spiritual world. Of course, we don't want to. We're afraid of going there. We don't know who we are there. We might be a blade of grass. How embarrassing, standing there naked forever. And no one appreciates me. The only thing they do is step on me all the time. Wait a second. Send me back to the spiritual world. I was the temple president. I'm just some blade of grass. Oh, another one. This is embarrassing. Put a dhoti on me or something. I got to be here forever. Oh, no. So we're afraid. What am I going to do there? There's no Facebook. I live with all my friends. I got so many likes. Therefore, it's necessary not only to try to fix the mind upon Krishna, but to actually try the daily activities we're doing, to try to do them in devotion, with some receptivity, that today I'm going to drink water, and I might remember even one time when I take a sip that Krishna is a taste in the water. Or I'm going to take prasadam, because we're all going to take prasadam soon, and I'm going to actually think, I'm going to try to taste this prasadam, rather than just try. I'm going to try to chew the prasadam and taste it and remember that this taste is Krishna, that he's so kind. I'm going to even chant the prayers beforehand. Yes, you're up there, I'm down here. Let's eat. My God, this takes too long. Try to do something with some care and concentration. And then see, be a little receptive. All right, Krishna, I'm smelling the flower. I'm cleaning the temple. I'm chanting your glories. Savayamana Krishna Badara Vindayo Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Vardhane. But I'm going to do it with something, with remembering you, that I'm doing it to please you. That this is something which is authorized, and since Krishna is so kind, he's giving me his energy to utilize in his service. So now I'm going to utilize his energy in his service, his body in his service. I'm going to smell the incense knowing that this is his body and he's having a relationship with me right now through my smelling the incense and appreciating it, loving it, appreciating Krishna. He supplied the incense. And it's not different from Krishna because it's offered to Krishna. I'm going to appreciate it. I'm going to relish it as a service, loving service to Krishna, as bhakti. Then the result is that Krishna can work with us. He can reciprocate with us, even in the most ordinary dealings, and we'll become Krishna conscious all the time. And then we can actually, everything we're doing, if it's done in Krishna consciousness, then it's very nice. So there's a whole list of things mentioned here. But the first thing is always remember that it's Krishna's energy. Krishna has given me this. He's told me how to utilize his energy through his representative. And I'm doing it to please him, to love him, to appreciate him. And then the result is that one will remember Krishna. Krishna will reveal himself to us. And we'll be able to experience how nice Krishna is. That he's unlimitedly nice, and his devotees are unlimitedly nice, and that way we'll also become nice. There's no other way of becoming actually nice. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. Or as Prabhupada once said, when he was offered simply wonderful, which is our first Maha Sweet in ISKCON. Mm-hmm. Was our only sweet. The only thing the cooks knew how to make. Do you know where it came from? Which divine recipe it came from? Simply when they found it on the back of a carnation powdered milk packet.
Whoa. Yeah.
That was deep. It was made out of powdered milk, butter, and a lot of sugar, powdered sugar. So the devotees are doubtful, whether it's bona fide, because carnation powdered milk is not exactly in disciplined succession. It's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam or in the Bhagavad Gita. So they gave Prabhupada a simply wonderful one time and asked him what he thought about it. So Prabhupada said, well, Krishna is simply wonderful. The devotees are simply wonderful. this Krishna consciousness is simply wonderful, and this simply wonderful is simply wonderful. So if you keep on eating these simple wonderful, they all become simply wonderful. Yes.
It was the first one I also cooked.
Yes.
You mentioned that the only enemy is our uncontrolled mind. I heard this more times. However, there is also, from what I know or what I found out, is that we have three kinds of miseries created by our own mind. The ones that come from the outside, from other persons, and also the calamities, the natural calamities. So how about the other two? Are those two enemies as well?
They're not our enemies, they're our friends. They help us fix our mind upon Krishna. It's not that people... First of all, who are we? We don't even know who we are. So how do we know who's our enemy and who's our friend? Because we don't know who we are. We think we're this body, and we think the enemy of my body is my enemy. But my body is my enemy. It keeps me in the cycle of birth and death, demanding so much service, putting me in so much misery. And the head of the senses is the mind. So it's the mind and the body that are causing me so much suffering. But I'm in love with it. Please, my dear body, I love you. You can kick me, you can embrace me or trample over me. I don't care. You're always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. And so the body keeps on kicking us, our mind's always disturbed, pointing out all the problems we have and how you're a failure, you don't serve me nicely. So it keeps us, therefore, what is our real enemy?
Our mind.
Yeah. Because if we're in the spiritual world, we're detached from this body and simply utilize it for Krishna's service, desire that Krishna utilize it for his service, then everything Krishna arranges for our benefit. When the snake bird came and bit Pariksha Maharaj, can we say the snake bird was Pariksha Maharaj's enemy? Since he had sent him back to the spiritual world. Was that so bad? Someone comes and says, I'm going to bite you and send you to the spiritual world. Oh no, don't do that. I don't want to go. I'm too young to go. So we have to see things in the right perspective. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Sometimes the devotees say that too much austerity makes our heart hard. So what is a balance in our practice, in our austerity, so control our mind, because our bhakti program, our bhakti way should make our hearts more soft, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what risk. Too much austerity makes a hard heart. How many months out of the year do you fast? What do you mean by austerity? Tapasya brahmacharyena samena cha damena cha. So, tapasya is the wealth of the renounced order. It's the wealth of the devotees. Too much means, just like Prabhupada gives the example of salt, that if you don't take any salt on your food, then it's tasteless. And if you take too much salt, then you can't eat it. But if you salt it just enough so that it's tasty, then it's very nice, the amount of salt. So we do austerity to fix the mind upon Krishna. We're not doing it in order to torture the body. Oh, you bad body, you're not giving me everything I want. I'm going to torture you. I'm going to get even with you. I don't love you anymore. No, we do austerity so we can think about Krishna. Just like Brahma, our original spiritual master, his austerity, he didn't do push-ups, he didn't do yoga. We don't see Brahma in a lotus, maybe he's on a lotus, but I don't think we see him in the lotus posture. Or standing on his head. or fasting. No, Brahma, his austerity was he fixed his mind upon Krishna. That was his austerity. And it took him a long time, by the way. Much longer than it should take us. Anyhow, he fixed it. But he did it because naturally, I mean, first of all, he was in the best, he had the best abode you could possibly get. I mean, there's nothing nicer than a lotus flower if you got to live on a lotus flower. It smells nice. Probably tastes nice, too. It's organic. But for the austerity, he just tried to fix his mind on Krishna. So we do austerities, like we fast on Ekadasi, not so we can, you know, lose weight. Of course, maybe you do lose weight if you want to, but that's not the main purpose. The main purpose is to think about Krishna, because it's easier to think about Krishna. We get up in the morning, not so we can, you know, make more money during the day, more time for making money. We get up in the morning so we can, it's the best time to think about Krishna, that's all. So everything, all our austerities are all meant so that we can think about Krishna. And if we think about Krishna, then our heart will become softer. And if we do austerities that we hate Krishna, like I have that experience. When I was, one of the first temples I was a temple president of, I was temple president of a lot of temples. One of them was in Houston, Texas. I got there in 1970. And I was with Vishnu John Maharaj. Have you ever heard of Vishnu John Maharaj? The three of us were there together. Srinath, Vishnu John Maharaj, and myself. And Vishnu John Maharaj was quite a charismatic devotee. We actually started to make devotees one after another, especially due to his charisma. He was very personal with people. But then he got the, Prabhupada wanted him to open more temples, so he left, and I became the temple president of all new devotees. And I mean, I was a really senior devotee. I was in the movement for all of 2 years or 3 years. So I was, you know, practically, I was like, you know, from the ancient history of the history verse. And since I was the temple president, I knew everything. I knew everything, and we strictly followed whatever Prabhupada said. And we didn't, we had, I think we had three books at that time. Maybe we had, yeah, we had three books at that time. We had the original three Srimad Bhagavatam, and we had the little blue Bhagavad Gita. And that was all the knowledge, if you could read them. If you can understand it. But we relied upon Prabhupada's tapes a lot. So in Prabhupada, we had the Golden Avatar wasn't quite out, but we got tapes from from Prabhupada. Every couple of weeks we got some tapes. So we, whatever Prabhupada said on the tape, we followed without fail. So in one tape, Prabhupada explained about how in Vrindavan, they fast for Ekadasi all night, stay up all night and fast. And on today was an appearance day, Prabhupada said, and we should fast for half a day to honor the Acharya. So that became our rule. Now we had all new devotees in the temple. You know, I was probably the oldest. I was probably 20 years old. So I was considered an old man in the temple. And we had, you know, young householder couples, and it was a rule, we had to fast every half a day for every appearance day. And at that time when we had a calendar, every other day was an appearance day or a holiday. So every other day we were fasting. And I remember one Mataji couldn't take it. You know, she was married. She said, "This is the end, I'm leaving." So she left, and her husband got really nervous, and he left. And I started to realize, well, maybe this fasting every... I was hungry, too. I said, maybe we have to, you know, make it a little bit more moderate. I mean, we at the beginning, because we had no knowledge, we were extremes. As I said before, Prabhupada I actually was, you know, married for 2 weeks in the movement. I never found out the name, my wife's name, though. So I can't tell. I have to look it up in the Veda base to find out what her initiated name was. But I didn't never find out what her legal name was. In any case, Prabhupada said I should get, he authorized my marriage. So I thought, all right, I'll get married. And then Prabhupada said he should open a temple. So they sent me down to Miami. Now I used to go down to Miami lived in New York. I used to go to Miami every year with my mother and my sister, and we'd go on vacation to Miami. So it was really a nice experience. Nice weather, we ate at nice restaurants and everything. So I thought, well, great. I'm going to open a temple in Miami. I'm going to become a controller of a nice place. A demigod in Miami. So I got down there, and I couldn't figure out where the devotees were. There were four sannyasis down there. They had been thrown out of the movement. Vishnu John Maharaj, Brahmananda Maharaj, Garga Muni Maharaj, and Subal Maharaj. What's that? Subal. So I thought, we were taking prasadam. I found out they were living in a bookstore. So I thought, it's not so bad. I mean, a bookstore, you know. We had milk and we had some banana milk. So things aren't so bad. But then they told me the next morning they're all leaving. And we had to leave the bookstore because that was only one night. So I wound up living in a park. Which wasn't the worst part of it. We bathed in the sink. We got up in the morning, we dusted off our sleeping bag. Sometimes we were living by a train track, so the train would come and throw dust on us. And then we bathed in the sink part. The most austere thing was that Garga Muni Maharaj, he had a reputation, he was known as Garga Muni. He trained me up at Happy Treasure. And he learned from Prabhupada, the sloka he learned from Prabhupada was you take money in but you give nothing out. So I was very good at that. But Garga Muni was better than I was. Garga Muni. So he wouldn't spend any money on food. So our prasadam for the day was, we get up in the morning, we chant our rounds, and then we cook on the grill in the park with all the karmis. And his assistant, Gopinath, he'd make chapatis, and myself, we'd make chapatis on the grill. And Garga Muni Maharaj would make apple chutney. And then we'd have a kirtan at 12 o'clock, and all the hippies would come around. And we put the apple chutney in the chapatis we made and passed them out to the hippies. And then when the hippies went away, after the short talk and the kirtan, then we got our meal for the day, which was two of those chapatis with a little bit of apple chutney in it. That would be all right for one day, but when it goes on weeks, you know, like that, just eating a little bit of apple chutney and two chapatis a day. Of course, then we went on for the rest of the day on book distribution. And book distribution meant that if we got the last bus and we made it exactly on time before the store closed, we were allowed to get 1/4 pint of sour cream and 1 banana for the rest of the day. Just in case we were hungry. So I didn't even realize it was the austerity I was going through. Because I figured this is just part of the process. We didn't know what the process was. There's nothing to compare it with. There's nothing, no one to complain to. Except for the trees or something. And finally, anyhow, to make a long story short, when I had a hitchhike from Miami, which took me 3 days, and a dhoti going through the south of America at that time to reach Houston, Texas, because Satsarup Maharaj, my GBC at the time, asked me to help Vishnu John Maharaj open up the temple in Houston, Texas. So I hitchhiked for 3 days with not eating anything, because Gaurav Muni wouldn't. The only thing he would buy me was 1/4 pound of fried chickpeas, which looked so disgusting to me. I wouldn't even eat it. Till I got to Houston, Texas, and I couldn't figure out where the devotees were, so I got so frustrated I ate 1/4 pound of fried chickpeas. In any case, finally I found Vishnujana Maharaj and Srinath. They were living in a garage apartment. So it was time for prasadam, and they put on my plate 6 chapatis. So there were three of us, so I thought I'd get 2 chapatis and I'm supposed to pass them out to the other 2. Because I hadn't eaten more than 2 chapatis in probably, maybe it was a couple of months or something. And they said, no, you could eat all 6 of them, it's all right. I said, wow. I'm in heaven. So I didn't know. For me, it wasn't too austere because I had nothing to compare it to. I figured this is just, this is what you do. This is what you go through. And I definitely got some mercy from Krishna and from Radharani going through that. So, could be sometimes too austere. And if you have the wrong attitude, anything could be sometimes too austere. But I wouldn't recommend anyone to go through that. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. I have a question. You mentioned about relishing some things in devotional service, and sometimes it invokes a reaction in us that, what? You mean I should relish? You mean I should enjoy? I'm not an enjoyer. I do not dare. I can't enjoy. I should suffer only.
You're not a sufferer either. If you're not an enjoyer, you're not a sufferer. How can you? In the spiritual world, there's nothing but enjoyment. And the material world is nothing but suffering. So if we love Krishna, everything is enjoyable. And if we don't love Krishna, everything is suffering. So which do we want? We want to love Krishna and enjoy everything? We want to not love Krishna and suffer everything? So in the spiritual world, when they burn incense, because there is incense there, even Krishna has the smell of aguru. There's a combination of sandalwood pulp, musk, and what else? Sandalwood.
Camphor?
Camphor. So, it's not that, oh, here comes Krishna, I better hold my breath. No, everyone loves Krishna, and they love the smell of Krishna, and Krishna are non-different. So if you smell Krishna, naturally there's love. And if wherever there's love in Krishna, there's pleasure. You can't avoid it. And when Krishna experiences the love of his devotee, smelling his body, then he gets pleasure from that. So, do we think the whole purpose of life is to suffer? Oh no, I'm gonna. No, but we have to remember that the smell is not different from Krishna. We should love it. And if we love it, Krishna will be pleased. And we'll also be happy. So I'll stop there. Oh, there's a question for you.
So this is a matter.
In the beginning, there's no question of we don't have enough intelligence or enough experience to discriminate between love and enjoyment. So even on the stage of Bhava Bhakti, or I guess a Sakti, whatever, the devotee, one of the impetuses he has is concentrated on becoming happy. Although this growing state of understanding what love is, but Bhava Bhakti is just a hint of what love is. Only when one actually comes to the platform of prema can we actually understand what real love is. Of course, that's by experiencing the love of Krishna's devotees. We have a tendency, love is dormant within us, but it's only experienced when we actually experience the love that Krishna has and the love Krishna's devotees have for each other. Then our natural love is awakened by association. But in the meantime, we should try to be happy in Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, what is the impetus to become Krishna conscious? It's the happiness, the higher taste that we experience. And part of that is just the change of mood. The most important part is the change of mood, and which comes from a change of perspective. So we should try to be happy in Krishna consciousness. We should try to enjoy what's enjoyable in Krishna consciousness properly. And then we'll be inspired to become more Krishna conscious. Otherwise, there's no question. If we're not enjoying Krishna consciousness, then we'll try to get happiness in the material world. Yes.
A quote from Satvata Tantra is saying, of all the activities of sadhana, the most important is service to Sri Guru. So sometimes Shravanam is emphasized, sometimes Kirtanam. Here Guru Sevanam is emphasized. So
Guru Sevana includes everything. Guru Sevana means to serve the instructions of the Guru, which are non-different from sadhu and shastra, which includes everything. If I chant Hare Krishna and I'm not doing a service to Guru and Krishna, then my chanting is useless. If I hear about Krishna that I'm not doing as a servant to Guru and Krishna, then my hearing won't have any effect. It'll have some effect. If I hear about it, I should be doing it for service to Guru and Krishna. So it's included. Everything is included to service the Guru. Acharyam Amujaniyam Navamartya Karichet. Namartya Buddha Suyeta Deva Guru, what's that? Sarva Deva Guru. That Acharyamam Vijaniyam Nava Manyate Karichet. So one should never disrespect the Guru. One should always respect him. Because the Guru is the said to be the sum total of all the demigods. Why is it sum total of all the demigods? Because he's giving us the example and the knowledge about Krishna, which is the purpose of all the Vedas. So everything is included. If the Guru is bona fide, that's what he gives is Krishna through all the different processes. Because when we say Guru, we not only mean initiating Guru, but any Guru we have. The initiating Guru instructs us how to see the other Gurus. And we honor them when we discover our other Gurus, we honor them on the same level as our Diksha Guru, because they give us Krishna. And they teach us how to love Krishna. That's our Gurus. So anyone who can teach us in some way how to understand and love Krishna, they're our Guru. Okay. Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.